free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
You have to debunk those because it's more than just like what you just said. It's more than spelling. For me, I tell people, I'm like, it has been the biggest regulator for my son ever. We have gained a whole lot more motor control. We have gained a whole lot of regulation. And I do attribute that to the speller's method only, not to really any other therapy that we've done, because we had already been on that track before.
Yep.
And it's been instant. And I use motor coaching constantly. And when I use the motor coaching constantly, it definitely helps him get to where he needs to be, to the next place. He is potty trained. And that's something at his age, with his level of autism, is just not common. So I say that to give the parents hope, because you have to do what's right for your child, but you also have to keep pushing and pushing the envelope too. You have to push out and be open-minded. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey, the podcast where we are diving deep into lived experiences of parents, professionals, siblings, and individuals on the spectrum. I'm your host, Ruth Castle, and today we have a truly special guest, one of the visionaries behind the Speller's Method in the movement, Dana Johnson. Dana is a pioneer. It is reshaping on how we approach communication for our non-speakers. Co-founding Speller's with the belief that spelling isn't just about literacy. It is about motor control, regulation, and giving individuals the means to express themselves. She has helped open groundbreaking centers without the that work with countless individuals, and is leading the way and advocating in the education on motor-first communication. In today's episode, we're going to go beyond the surface. It isn't just about spelling. It's about why motor coaching and regulation are foundations of real communication, how Speller's is changing lives, and what parents, professionals, and communities need to know about supporting their child effectively. So grab your coffee and get comfortable and let's dive in. Thank you so much, Dana, for being here today. Thank you.
You're so welcome, Ruth. I'm excited to talk about a number of things that you mentioned. Actually, as you were reading through, I'm like, oh, these are some great topics to chat about.
Yes. And I'm happy to have you on for my listeners as well today, because they are definitely, this is going to be a treat.
Good. Good. I'm excited.
Dana, share how Speller's came to life, what sparked the movement, why motor first approach? What was that like missing piece and, you know, traditional autism communication methods?
Right. So I was a more traditional OT, meaning that I've always actually worked in the autism field since I graduated. And then I opened my own practice here in the Tampa Bay area and really focused on sensory integration therapy, because that was the thing for those with autism, because we knew that they had sensory processing differences. It was probably around 2015 that I read a book where it was an individual who did not have the ability to speak, and he used alternative form of communication. And in this case, it was typing. And he wrote in his book, OT did nothing for me. And I was like, whoa, pause. Because I'm like, this is the group that I work with. Like, what is he talking about? And it was then that he said, you know, sure, like jumping in the ball pit, like, you know, going on the scooter board, all those things were super fun. What kid doesn't like those things? And, you know, it did address his sensory differences, meaning it supported regulation, but it didn't actually help what was the issue. And that is this disconnect between the brain and the body, which I call whole body apraxia. And some of your listeners may be familiar with childhood apraxia of speech, maybe dyspraxia in the OT world. That's kind of what OTs tend to call, or developmental coordination disorder, or DCD. So those are more familiar diagnoses, which I was aware of, but just never really put everything together. And it was, he said in his book, it wasn't until his mom hired a trainer to work with him when he was older that he started to build these connections, because the trainer would work with him working on specific functional movement patterns, because he had ideas. He wanted to do things. He wanted to follow through with some of those requests that his teachers or his parents or someone was asking him to do. But it wasn't because he didn't understand. It wasn't because he was being defiant and he didn't want to do it. And it wasn't because he was trying to escape. All of these things are probably familiar with your listeners. It was because he had what's called whole body apraxia. So he has the idea, he has the intention, but he can't initiate his body. Or in some cases, he can't inhibit or stop his body. So I see both profiles. And it was then that I started to look through my work with individuals with complex or profound autism, because that's what we're talking about too, those who don't have the ability to communicate, to who could be nonverbal or non-speaking. So misunderstood, because this is the real issue. I always say to parents or other professionals, it's not the only issue, right? Like, there's a lot of things happening, but I think we go to, well, he just doesn't feel like it, or he doesn't understand, rather than that could be an option. He totally may not feel like it. I don't feel like doing everything every single day, you know.
Exactly.
But I don't go to that first. I go to, they have this disconnect, and one of my jobs is to be able to support that. So when we look at communication, we're like, okay, well, every form of communication requires our ability to intentionally plan. So we're moving, right? We're moving when we're speaking. Our lips are moving. We're moving when I'm giving you a gesture or nonverbal, you know, cue. So every form of communication requires intentional motor. So, okay, I'm learning all this. And then I teamed up with my co-founder, Dawn Marie Gavin, where she has two boys, both non-speaking. Well, one's unreliably speaking, the other's non-speaking. And she is in San Diego, and her and I had the biggest clinics for spelling at the time. I also obviously implement OT and intentional motor work. And we got together because of the documentary Spellers. And so we were both a part of that and got to meet, you know, those amazing spellers and typers in the documentary. And it was then that we formed Spellers Method, and Spellers Revolution is what our business is called, our organization. And, you know, from that point on, it was just our mission to provide a way for these individuals to be able to communicate, but even more so, to be able to provide support to parents. Yes. Because parents are an essential part of this team. And if you are part of more of a traditional OT, PT, ABA, speech therapy, it's usually, here's my child, do the therapy. I'll do a few things at home if life doesn't get too lifey, and then we'll come back once a week. Our goal is to essentially work ourselves out of a job and to coach the parent to be able to do this, to be able to understand their child's specific individualized sensory motor profile, so that we can really change lives. Like, that's what we do want. So that's really kind of how, and Spellers, we actually formed initially Empowered 2. That was the original business name. And then with the documentary, we now call it Spellers. And then we created the method, Spellers Method, which is the form of spelling or typing to use as communication.
I love that. And, you know, and I talk about this too. It's just not only for older children, just all, all, you know, all ages, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I have a lot of people, I even had one this morning was saying, you know, I was talking about it and they're like, oh, you should talk to Ruth. They do spelling to communicate. She's like, well, I don't know if my daughter could. It's like, well, at her age, it's going to be more about the motor regulation at this point.
It's true. It's true. And I think, you know, when people hear spelling, right? So you kind of talked about this in your intro. When you hear spelling, you immediately think of legit spelling. Like, right. You know, and so I get all the time, like, well, my child can't even identify letters. Like, how are you thinking that they're able to do this? Like, do I have to teach them how to spell first? And some even think that when they come in to see me, that that's my job. I'm going to teach them how to spell. Uh-huh. And it's not, because if you think about, well, what's required to identify letters and to demonstrate your knowledge, it's uh-huh. being able to point. It's being able to circle the letter. That's a motor skill. That's a motor skill. So if they have a motor disability, then how are you accurately going to get like their knowledge and what they do know? So, so I think that that is part of it, where they think, okay, well, you know, they have to know how to spell because you're talking about spelling. It's actually funny because I just had this conversation yesterday or 2 days ago with a family, and I'm coaching them for the very first time, right? And their son was 9, 10, and I said the biggest hurdle to get over at first, I think, is to shift your mindset from we're spelling and he's responding to the questions that you're asking him by spelling things, to we're working on learning a new motor skill. Like, if I went out and got a tennis pro to teach me how to play tennis because I don't know how to play, that's essentially what I'm doing in the early sessions, because they have to learn the motor skill to be able to point first, right? To be able to,
yes.
and reliably do that. So I think that the youngest that I've ever worked with was 4 and a half. Just about 4 and a half. And it didn't look like what a session would be like with my, you know, 25-year-old, right?
Exactly.
Just any 4 and a half-year-old isn't going to be able to sit in a chair for 45 minutes or, you know, so it really is building that base of the intentional motor regulation, but also implementing some of that cognitive input. Because unlike what I was taught in OT school, which was individuals with autism also are cognitively disabled. So why would you do anything age appropriate? Because they don't understand. We have to do, you know, first this, then that, rather than, hey, first we're going to do this, and then after that, we're going to move on to this. So I want to be able to present cognitive information that is age appropriate, because that actually helps to regulate. And that makes sense, because if I'm listening to a podcast that's either way too high and like the science quantum physics or way too basic, I'm going to not listen to it because I'm going to be bored, or I'm going to be like, oh, this is overstimulating. So the same thing goes with my clients, is that it's really supportive when we do have that high cognitive input, even though it may look like they're not listening or they're not attending, they're listening all the time. So yeah, we implement different strategies depending on the age, just because developmentally they're different. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, I think that's just like when it comes to like some of the misconceptions when it comes to spelling, you know, you have to debunk those, because it's more than just like what you just said. It's more than spelling. For me, I tell people, I'm like, it has been the biggest regulator for my son ever. We have gained a whole lot more motor control. We have gained a whole lot of regulation. And I do attribute that to the speller's method only. Not to really any other therapy that we've done, because we had already been on that track before.
Yep.
And it's been instant. And I use motor coaching constantly. And when I use the motor coaching constantly, it definitely helps him get to where he needs to be, to the next place.
Absolutely. And I think it is. It's almost like a different language, right? Like, meaning that it's not just applicable to one or two things, because everything that we do throughout the day requires that intentional motor, meaning that we are planning our movements. We have intention behind our actions. And when you have a breakdown in that neurological system, that's when we have to support them and understand that it's not that they don't want to do something. It's that they literally can't get their body there. And yeah. especially for the younger ones, because they're going, their nervous systems are much younger. And you start to kind of see, well, you know, for certain clients, everybody has a different motor profile, sensory motor profile. But especially with littles, they tend to be like very easily overstimulated, right? Or yes. busy and moving constantly. So to have something that can support and regulate their body, when they feel better, they're going to be more regulated. When they feel understood, just like us, not going to be feel very regulated if I'm like, you're not understanding me. Like I even think about with my husband, right? No, wait, you're not understanding me. And I'm starting to get frustrated. That's dysregulation. So mm-hmm. if we can better understand them in their bodies, that in and of itself is going to be a changer just given for regulation.
Yeah. And, you know, that actually brings me into my next point. Like, why is it so important? Why is motor so important to regulation? You know, and I think we already just covered that pretty much, you know, like a deep dive into that motor. The coaching is the first step. You know, before you can help that child begin to spelling, you've got to motor coach them to get their, sometimes in my son's case, sometimes we have to coach him to get to the chair. We have to get him to get off the floor. It's not that he doesn't want to do it. Before I call it floppy. Like he would just be floppy sometimes. Yep. Well, it wasn't because he didn't want to get up or he would lean and stuff like that. And he still does it, but I can motor coach him out of those. And it's not a behavior. It's apraxia.
That's what's hard, right? Because it looks like behavior. And if it was a neurotypical kid his same age, you know, doing it, who did have speech, who would be saying, I don't want to do this, I don't want, and then combining that with laying on the floor, flopping over, you know, so that's pretty clear. But when you don't have the ability to verbally communicate, your body is, and part of the reason why you don't have the ability to verbally communicate is because of that disconnect, right?
Right.
The language centers in our brain, your son is completely fine with, meaning he can understand all of this. The challenge and the breakdown is the connections between those language areas and the movement of his mouth to like connect everything. Well, it's not just affecting his mouth. It's his entire body, including his ocular motor muscles, which nobody thinks about this. You know, it's like, well, if he couldn't get his eyes to where he needs to get to, we're not going to be able to be successful. So even just the simple things like if I want to go grab my keys, which are right over there on the table, I'm going to glance at them and then grab them. My eyes have to get to the direction so that I know where I have to go. Well, individuals with autism and other neuromotor disabilities that affect their connection between the brain and the body, they can't do this. And yet we're asking them to do this and go there and pick up this. And, you know, and without that control, we're not going to be successful. And the same thing would be with us. So I think that we have to, I like making those comparisons because we can relate to this if we can imagine it with us and then be like, oh, yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah. You know, and I've also read too, you know, like the language center of the brain is different in the motor part of the brain, which is definitely true. This is why, you know, praxis of speech can happen, you know, and then they can have full cognitive language, but they're just stuck in their body.
Right. Absolutely. And that's, you know, something that I think when because I have worked early on with individuals with the diagnosis of childhood apraxia of speech, which is a medical diagnosis by a speech therapist, that they fit into certain criteria, right? So, you know, they're able to approximate, they're able to be intentional with their speech. It's more reliable. It's just really difficult to understand. That's different than our guys. And so I think, and girls, and I think that that's where that misconception, like I have so many families that come in, they're like, I never heard of whole body apraxia, or let alone apraxia. Like some have, but most haven't. And it's just like, why haven't we heard this before? And it's just, it's difficult. Yes, go ahead.
And I will tell you, I have never even heard of apraxia until I met you guys. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, since we have met you and we do the methods, I know everything is working. It's doing he has made leaps and bounds, and bounds. And I am so grateful that I started when I did and that he was young, you know, and he's only going to make more gains and keep continuing working with him in this way. And, you know, I know you're training the parent and I feel like I'm there, but he's not there. I still need you guys for the, when it's, they're younger, getting that more, that motor in, the more the OT side of the, of it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, and you can speak to this too, because you're a parent, you know, of a speller. One of the things that I also talk with parents about, because a lot of my sessions tend to be parent coaching and having conversations with parents, because it can be emotional. I mean, it's one thing when you have a child that's 5, 6, 7, you're just kind of learning about this. It's a completely different experience when you're a parent of a child who's 35. 40, where for this entire time, you have believed what other professionals have said, which is he has the cognitive capacity of an 18-month-old. He's never going to do this. He's never going to do that. That's a very different place to be. And so a lot of conversation that I have is around those kinds of changes in mindset. And so I think that when a parent can start to shift their mindset, there's some times when you can just be like, oh yeah, got it, no problem. Shifting from my child has an intellectual disability to holy cow, all this time he's been understanding everything. I mean, you can imagine what that load could be. Mm-hmm. However, the good side of shifting this mindset is that you are going to see changes in your child just based off that mindset shift. And I'm like, okay, well, if I had a coach who didn't believe in me, who, you know, was like, oh, well, you know, they don't really understand, you know, talked about me in front of me, all those things. Now, I have to say a caveat here, too. I'm not blaming parents. You just don't know, right? Like there is this, we don't know. And I was there, did all those things too. And so I think that when we do learn these things and we start to shift the mindset, that is when, like a coach, he's like, ready, go. He's supportive. He's like coaching me. He's still going to know that I might screw up and it might not be perfect, but I believe in you. I know you can do this. That mindset shift is going to be huge in this journey. And so I think that it's not just about let's go to therapy and let's do this once a week and there's so much more involved. And I know you are the expert in that, Ruth, in terms of your experience to help support other parents, but I see it every day. I see it when parents are like, you know what? I had expectations. I'm like, awesome, because every child should have expectations. But, you know, I started talking to him like he was 22. I didn't say potty anymore. I said, hey, do you want to use the restroom before we go? Like, it's those little things that make a huge difference, difference. And let's say, for argument's sake, that your child does have an intellectual disability, because I'm not here to say that every non-speaker is all, you know, the IQ level. That's not what I'm talking about. Are there some that have intellectual disability? 100%. However, I'm also not talking about like they're all, everybody's IQ is like, you know, 200. It's not an IQ, but you know what I mean? It's like way up there above average. I'm just saying, let's talk to them and treat them like a same age peer. Like that's because that's presuming competence. Presuming competence is different than presuming knowledge. Presuming knowledge is that the individual knows everything. I don't presume that in anybody, actually. I presume that they can understand and they can learn. And that's the least dangerous assumption. So.
Yes. And I absolutely love that. You know, that's what I do. I have people, when they see me with Elijah, a lot of times they're like, you talk to him like he understands everything. I'm like, that he does. Understand everything.
Yeah.
You know, I, at the age of 7, you know, I'm saying, oh, do you need to go to the restroom?
Yeah.
You know, because it looks like you might need to, just like how he's standing or how he's acting, you know, how kids can be. Sometimes they're engrossed in the skill or whatever they're doing and they don't want to break away. Uh-huh. So you have to remind him. So I talked to him like he, you know, he does understand. And I do understand that. And, you know, that was part of my journey of finding you guys too. He was also, you know, spelling on his own And he's spelling Bluey and put a bunch of other things with like magnets and things. But when I got to you guys, it was so much more than that. And I'm so glad that I gotten that. And I've been doing that with him. And he's been making such great gains on the letterboards and with his regulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where it's like you said, it's not just about spelling, you know, it's all the other things, the regulation. I mean, if we're not regulated, we're not going to be successful at what we're doing, right? You know, if you're dysregulated, you're stressed, you know, you're anxious, it's going to be really hard for you to sit down and write that report or that, you know, important email, right? Like, we're not going to be able to do that yet. The expectation for our kids is to sit down, quiet hands, calm, look at me in the eye, all these things. And meanwhile, their sensory system or their internal sensory system is just going to lose it, right? And you wonder, like, well, they're self-injurious or they're injurious towards me. And it came out of nowhere. And I'm like,
actually,
you know, and we just don't see it. Like, we don't see it. But there's always something that, and this is where what is challenging in some of the therapists that I talk with, who you're trying to find, you know, the antecedent that triggered the behavior. And it's interesting because my clients will often tell me that the behavior was actually caused by an emotion that they felt because of a memory that happened, not because of anything that happened within the last couple of hours. And so I know, because I used to do this, is that we as therapists, we want to be able to go, okay, what was that antecedent so that we could then solve the problem, you know, of the behavior. I'm like, well, you might not ever know, right? And it's just not the typical kind of process that we go, or traditional method, because in that instance, we're not looking at the sensory motor aspect of it and the trigger of the behavior, which is actually a physical movement, if you think about it. So behavior is actually movement. And when I did a talk a number of years ago, and it was called Behavior Isn't Always Communication. And I would get a lot of comments on it because I used to tell parents that behavior is communication. We need to look at what they're doing because they're trying to communicate. And I don't always believe that anymore, because what we see that's happening on the outside may not be what they're actually feeling or thinking on the inside. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other mind shift thing, because that's not how we're built. We're not built to kind of think like that.
Yeah. Now, I'm starting to see like shifts with Elijah with that right now, too. And he will discuss on AAC, like how he's feeling, and like he won't put the right emotion. But then I'll ask him later and he'll still say the same thing. But then sometimes he's right with his emotions, like he can label them. So I know he knows what they are. But I think he is having that internal struggle, just like what you're saying. Yeah. So I can definitely see that. And I'm like, he was feeling a certain way, but that's not how his body was reacting.
Exactly. Yes. And that's the whole body apraxia piece. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's good for the listeners to know that, too, because, you know, I'm still going through it and I'm still learning. And it's going to change, like I was saying in another episode. It's going to change because they're getting older and, you know, new things come, puberty, other things come into play. So just because he's doing well right now doesn't mean that we won't have some type of regression later.
Absolutely.
And then go back in.
That's how we all develop. We're not this linear progression of our development. Like, nobody develops like that. I just think that because we're so focused on, you know, progress as parents, we, of course, want to be able to see the progress. But, and you know, because it's not this linear, we tend to hyper-focus on the back, you know, pedal or regression, right? But we have to look at the whole picture, because often you'll start to see where there's progress in other areas. We're kind of regressing in one, but then we have this huge leap that goes forward once we kind of step back a little bit and look at that whole picture. So it's really important that we, you know, when I'm talking with parents, that these are the things that we're talking about, because we're, I think, over the years and as therapy has evolved, we are focused on the wrong things. We're absolutely focused on the wrong things.
Yeah. And it's not, and like you said, it's a big mind shift too. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even a culture shift when it comes to, you know, because there's a lot more kids being diagnosed with autism nowadays. Mm-hmm. So there, and there's a lot of wait lists out there too for parents that, but, you know, I myself, I'm just going to say we were on a wait list for ABA for many years, 3 years actually. But I didn't allow that to stop me. I started doing other things. I did DIR therapy, yep. You know, which is play-based, and you know about that. Mm-hmm. I had two OTs. I had a speech therapist. You know, I didn't stay idle because that time wasn't time to be idle just because I was on a wait list and I was on several. So, I mean, I finally got in. However, even though we got off the wait list, I didn't take off of the other therapy.
Right. Right.
I was like, I have to continue this because this is working and we're going to continue to keep going and I'm going to continue to do what I know is working. Yeah. And with my son, at least, you know, yes, he's still non-speaking, which is okay. He's communicating. He can communicate very vastly in different ways with mm-hmm. me mm-hmm. and with his team. And he is potty trained, and that's something at his age with his level of autism is just not common.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I say that to give the parents hope because you have to do what's right for your child, but you also have to keep pushing the envelope too. You have to push out and be open-minded.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that... you know, just what, you know, the values of Spellers, like our core values are just so empowering for parents. Like that's what we want to do is to empower parents, to coach parents. I mean, it's reflected in our method. But also just what you said, Ruth, about even though you couldn't get into ABA, you still move forward and did things. And I think the system, the traditional way of doing things has been, well, you need to have therapists to do these things. And of course, because we're experts in certain areas, but you are the expert in your child. And you know, like I will say to parents all the time, what's your gut, right? And they're like, well, nobody's ever asked me that. And I'm like, well, number one, that's sad, you know, because you know what is right and what is wrong. So when you go and you're like, these are the five different things that I could try, what is it? And you go with your gut because what works for your son may not work for another child, right? Exactly. So I think that it's just been the system of you go here, you get this, then you go here, then you go here. And these are the experts. Yes, but it's not, you can't rely on the experts. And that's where for us here, the parent coaching piece of it has to be there so that you aren't relying on us. You come back as needed. And as you know, your son is going to develop. And like you said, he's going to go through puberty and then he's going to go through challenging times. It may be big changes in his life, you know, moving, like whatever that might be. Then you come back and you get support. But I just want to empower parents to know that you guys can do this.
Yes.
And go with your gut. Like I say that on a lot of things, school, therapists, going to doctors. Like if you and your gut do not feel that this is a good match, then don't do it. I don't care who the professionals are with PhDs and MDs and all this stuff. Don't go there. Don't go there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Because just like what you're saying, you know, I say to parents too, I say, you have the PhD in your child. You're with them and you grew them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have that PhD. You know them better than anybody else. At least the parents should know them better than anybody else.
Yes. Yes. And that's important. That's really important because I think, again, the system is set up to be where, you know, OT like myself or another professional or a physician or expert in whatever area, parents need to, number one, take the responsibility to read, to learn, and then figure out what is going to be best and not rely on all those experts. I mean, I do that with my own health. Like, that's just me. I was listening to a podcast this morning. And again, we have put doctors, physicians, pediatricians at the top. And they actually, their education on autism is like this. And yet we're like, okay, we'll follow you to say all these different therapies and what we're supposed to do. And I just like, no, we can't, we have to bring that down and really be confident to look at the options, what is going to work best for your child, and go with it and seek out other parents. Like, I think you are like the parent to parent bond and the trust is way more than if I said to another parent, oh, you should do this, compared to another parent that would say to you, oh, Ruth, this is something that has worked, versus me, you're going to take that advice from the parent because they've lived in your shoes. I have not. I have not. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's powerful to say too, because I run a group too on Facebook, and I do get a lot of people, they message me. And then I have a lot of people, especially in Pinellas County, they will, his pediatrician, well, she'll send people, email me like, this mom has a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. And I've been just like making resources of everything. And I'll send it to him. I'll give him my opinion. I was like, but you know, I don't know your child. So this is, you know, you need to check this out. But here's some resources.
Exactly.
Because they're, you know, not everything works for me and not everything's going to work for them.
Right.
But, and they might not need anything for like, you know, apraxia, but I have that in my toolbox to share with other parents. We have other people in our group that actually come to Spellers because I've talked about Spellers on in the group.
Yeah.
You know, and they come to me and they're like, well, how are you liking it? And I was like, I really like it. I think you should try it. If you're going to do it, it's like, you got to commit. I said, it is a commitment. I said, but I do think your children would benefit from going because, you know, at the end of the day, they are in the same boat like my son. Of course, I can't say anything. I mean, I think your children have apraxia.
Right. Right.
My job.
Right.
But my job, you know, if they ask me what I'm doing and they see my son's having success, I share that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, you should look into it. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a good fit for yours. And then there's been some, I'm like, no, I don't think that's, I mean, you can look into it, but I don't think that's the track that you should be looking at.
Right.
You know, just because I know their child well, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so individualized. And I think that that's one of the things with Spellers method is that we look at the entire sensory motor profile. You know, it's not just one thing. And that's how we're all made up. You know, each of us have a sensory motor profile that makes certain things difficult. You know, for example, riding roller coasters, this can't do that anymore, right? Because my sensory system is so overrun that I just end up like, no, I'm so like dysregulated right now. So I don't, you know, I don't do it. And so it's these kinds of things where some of us love things, others avoid things, and we just have to get through life that way. And when you know and are empowered with more information about your child, you can then, again, be that number one person for them. And, you know, so that, and that is going to just change so many things in so many different areas.
Yeah. And it's just not only about spelling. It's just like you said, in so many different areas, you know, I presume competence in him. Like he can do literally anything that he puts his mind to. If he puts his mind to it, he can do it. Just like us. Like we can put our mind, if we want to do it, we can do it. It might be hard.
Yep.
It might not come to you that easy, but that's okay. You're still doing it, right?
Right.
So, I look at it, that approach, and I try to tell parents of no matter what, you know, their children, I was like, just presume competence in them. That doesn't mean that, oh, like you said, presume knowledge. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they can attempt to try in some way, some form, and then it will get better because nobody became a tennis pro within the 5 minutes of taking a lesson.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Right. But that's the expectation that we have. Right. And then the other thing with whole body apraxia is that it's consistently inconsistent. So unfortunately, the way that we as, you know, professionals in this field take data is each day or each session, depending on what therapy you're in, you're looking for progress. And if they have a really difficult motor day, then they're not going to be able to do that. But that doesn't mean that we're starting all over again, especially if we're teaching. And this is where the knowledge piece comes in, right? Like if we're teaching colors, numbers, letters, whatever it is, and we're looking at that every day and they can't identify something, that isn't because they don't know it. That's because of their motor system and not being able to intentionally, and they're like motor planning, intentionally point to whatever it is. Or a common one that I have gotten over the last couple of weeks actually is like identifying numbers with manipulatives. So give me five blocks and they, you know, five, and then we're at five and they keep going. That doesn't mean that they don't know what five is. They can't inhibit their body because that's intention. And that's the breakdown. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, that brings me to one of the things I was going to talk about was the big myths. You know, they say, oh, spelling to communicate is just one of those another facilitated communication methods.
Yep.
No, it's not, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that misconception, everything got lumped. So if you're reading different blogs and articles, it's all lumped in there. And so for those who may not know, so facilitated communication or supported typing. So way back, facilitated communication was where the communication partner would physically touch an individual in order to type on a keyboard or an iPad. But the and I have not ever been trained in facilitated communication, but I also understand the premise of it from an OT perspective, because if you're giving them proprioceptive input or the connection, that then alerts their brain to go, oh, here's my hand in space. So now I can intentionally hit the letters or on the keyboard or iPad, versus if I don't touch, then my, I don't know where this hand is. And so now I can't do it, right? So with FC, that is the, like, it's facilitated, meaning there's physical touch, and same thing with supported typing. So with Speller's method, I don't ever touch the individual when they're spelling. I'm teaching the motor skills. Now, here's the thing. Like if I, or let's go back to, you know, the tennis or golf, right? If you're, if you're hiring a tennis pro or a golf pro to teach you, they're physically going to help your body get into certain positions. They're physically going to touch you because you're learning a new motor skill, and your brain has to work through the motor plan in order for it to become automatic. So those of you who either play tennis or golf don't have to think about the whole motor plan like you did on day one. So this is the same thing that we're working on with individuals who come in with spelling, is that I'm not asking these questions like, what's your opinion on, or, you know, what do you want to do today? I'm practicing spelling age-appropriate words, but I'm also giving them prompts until they learn the motor plan. Then I'm going to reduce those prompts, so now there isn't any influencing prompts, so that then they can spell, but they have to learn the motor plan. They they can't just sit and, because some parents will come in a little, they'll be like, yeah, they can only type, you know, Blue's Clues on a keyboard, or they can only type something that they're copying. And I'm like, okay, yes, I have spellers that can do that, typers that can do that. So they know where the keys are. But what's happening there is that they practice that over and over again. So now it's automatic. Or copying something is a different cognitive demand than having to come up with something and hold it in your head and then do the motor skill. So we have to start where there's a lower motor demand. And then as the motor skills get better, we work our way up to the keyboard. And I have spellers now where they are using a keyboard on a regular basis and, in fact, are using the keyboard completely independently. I'm not holding it. So that is where, you know, a lot of the issues are with it. Number one is that facilitated communication is touching, whereas Speller's method, there's no physical touch. And then two, why does somebody have to hold the board? Well, now there are spellers, lots of them out there, and typers that do not have somebody holding the board. So they can do it because number one, they worked on regulation. And number two, they've worked on to refine those motor skills so that now they're automatic. And like, think back to ninth grade typing, right? You're like, the red fox jumped over and you're like having to look and then all this. You know, it was probably the best class I took in high school, by the way. Then that's an aside. But just because now I can do it without looking, right? Like, right. I don't have to look and I'm not hunting and pecking on this keyboard. Yeah. But that's because my motor skills, I practiced and I got better. So now I can do it without thinking about it. So that's really the whole what we do in Speller's method for these individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I will say, too, like, I used the method a lot when I was using his AAC and teaching him how to use his big array, because Elijah's on a 77 grid on his AAC, which is, and he hasn't had an AAC. He started AAC after even Speller's method, but I couldn't get it to be with everybody. Like, I can't be with him to be his communication partner everywhere. So I was like, let's do AAC. I think it would be good. But the one I chose that has like the keyboard so he can spell out with me too. And I cut it just like the 26 letter board. I designed it on his AAC. But the reason why I did it that way and he's so great at his AAC device is because I use the Speller's method for him to like get your eyes there, get our eyes on it. Let's do that, you know, and I model it. So I have another one set up and I model it for him and then he'll find it himself, you know. So it's about that modeling. And what was interesting is how I set it up too, was very similar how I hold the boards.
Right.
So I got a case that was stand similar to how the boards are setting. So when he's poking on his AAC device, it was similar to his board pokes. And I got him to isolate his finger more because he had to isolate to get for his AAC. So I'm just saying, you know, I was getting the method to utilize for his AAC to help him with that, because it has definitely helped. And it carries over very well. It's also carried over to his music therapy very well.
Oh, yay. That's so great. That's so great. Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought up AAC, Ruth, because I get that question a lot. Well, he's got an AAC device. Like, are we going to have to stop this? Will it conflict with spelling? And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, I would never, I'm in this position to support communication. So if I said to you, stop using I'm essentially taking away the form of communication. And we're all multimodal communicators. I speak, I text, I write emails, you know, my physical, like whatever. We all communicate different ways. And so I would never say to a client, oh, you can't use your AAC device. The difference, because this is a common too, well, he's got his AAC, like, why do we need to do spelling or what? And it's really, a lot of my clients will use their AAC for those fast things, right? It's like a bathroom, I need to use the bathroom, or can we go to the store or whatever it is? Because AAC, really the majority of my clients just kind of get stuck at the requesting, right? And a lot of that is because parents and other professionals believe that that's where they're going to land, right? The back and forth, they don't have the cognitive ability to be able to do the back and forth. Or if they do, it's going to be very simplistic. So with spelling, these individuals are having conversations, right? Where on an AAC device, that can be very challenging. It's not that they can't do it, but when you have a motor disability, that is very, very challenging to do this back and forth and be able to share what you're thinking and feeling and or demonstrate your knowledge. And that's really one of the major goals. I have lots of spellers that have attended like high school, graduated with a regular high school diploma, or gone to college and are currently in college taking classes. So, and some of them, do they have AAC? Oh, totally they do. And they'll still use them. But this offers something that goes above and beyond what that can do for them.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's how it just differentiates a little bit from, you know, speech therapy and integrating that in there as well. Because, you know, when we were doing, I'll be honest, when we were doing our AAC and then we were working on our AAC journey, I kind of was a little bit alone on that. Even though he had a speech therapist, she didn't really like the program that we chose. And the reason why I chose that program was because in later future, the next step is like a hybrid, but it's textable and you can text it and email. And I wanted that one because it had both option that he could utilize in the future, and it was going to be easier for him to transition to when he gets older and more open on the boards. And I was like, no, I'm going to stick with this one because I really like it. I think he'll be fine. That we're going to start on the 77 grid. Again, there's that parent intuition that you have to follow. I already know. I think he's capable. Yeah. No, wait. I know he's capable. We're going to move forward with this. And it's been beautiful. He's doing back and forth. I do feel like maybe in a year or so, we're going to get even open on spelling. I do feel like it's coming very quickly.
Yeah.
And I know he's still young. So I can feel that, though, because we're getting
so much progress. That's what's so great. It's so great because he's so young. You know, when I have parents that come in and their kids are still in public school, I'm like, this is the time to really focus on number one, regulation, number two, the motor planning, and number three, reliable communication. Because once he has reliable communication, meaning that he can demonstrate his knowledge, he can then go to high school and get his regular diploma, right? If that's his goal. Like, so starting young, so great. Yeah.
So another thing I wanted to let you know too, I made my own board. Okay. I don't know if I ever told you this, but I made my own board.
Confession time. Now we're going to confess.
But this was for, okay. So I had to give him tests for homeschool because I homeschool him. And I was like, how am I going to show that he can be competent and answer these questions? And I have to do this test. So what I came up with, I made a board. Okay. And I put a question up at the top. I put the question and I would always read it. And then I had multiple choice. And it was a felt and laminated, and I could change them out for each test I had to give him and each question. And then I would film it because I wanted to make sure that, so when I give it to the homeschool evaluator, that they're just not taking my word. And I would mark down on the worksheet that we had to do what he chose. And of course, sometimes he missed them, but it was rare. And I wasn't guiding him.
Yeah.
I would mix it up because I'm like, I started changing instead of A, but I'm like, is he choosing A all the time or is he choosing C all the time?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I had to make sure. Yep. But no, he wasn't. He was answering the questions correctly. And I just called, I didn't call it anything. I was just like, I was using spelling to communicate to answer the multiple choice instead of having to do the boards. I was like, how can I show that he can answer multiple choice? And that's how I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my response to that is, way to go, mom, to be, you know, inventive. And I love moms like you because it's like, I have a problem, I'm going to solve it, right? Like, it's great. The one thing that I will say, though, with that is that Elijah was already exposed to the motor. You were exposed to it. You understood it. You understood the spelling part of it versus a parent that kind of tries that may not understand their child's sensory motor profile. And so if he gets it, quote, wrong, we look at that and go, oh, it's because he doesn't know it and he's going to fail, right? Exactly. Or it's because his motor skills, we haven't worked on that. And so his motor skills aren't reliable. So he could be looking at B and that's the answer, but then his eyes shift and his body goes to E or D, whatever, the wrong answer. And then parents are getting like just deflated. Like they just feel defeated. They're like frustrated. So that's the only caveat that I would say is because you got it, you understood, and Elijah already had that baseline.
Oh, yes.
I'm only saying that just because the parents are going to listen and then, oh, that's a great idea, Ruth. And then it's like, oh, he's failing. I'm like, whoa, let's just not just conclude that, right? Not that he may need more, like he might need more help with something, but that isn't the be all end all. Like that's it.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because I don't want the listeners to say, oh, let's make this board and it's going to work.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I know, you know, like it's like I said, you're the PhD of your kid. And if that didn't work, you know, there was a couple of times I was like, this is how I pulled back. And that's why I had to make sure that his motor was actually going and understanding him. And again, you have to understand your own child, but I knew that it was working for him and how I was
right.
how I was doing it.
Yes.
But then if it wasn't, I would have scrapped that and been like, don't ever tell anybody that you tried that.
Right.
But it does for in his case. In his case, it does.
Yes.
And I haven't shared my board. Maybe one day I'll show you.
Yeah. Bring it in. Love to see it.
Bring it in. So you can see it. I want to talk a little bit about the future growth of the, because you're in Atlanta now.
Okay. Right. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So now that we got our place in Tampa and we have one in, you said France, what was the other one in California?
San Diego. Yep. San Diego. And then I just opened the Atlanta Center in January. So we have a Speller Center Atlanta. So Speller Center Tampa is here, obviously. And then Speller Center Atlanta was opened in January. And we have a couple of providers there. We have one that's just doing the training right now. And then we will be offering in the next couple of weeks, actually, intentional motor as well in our gym. So we will have the very like the same services that we have here up there in Atlanta. So yes.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So is there any more like, you know, nationwide or even worldwide like expansions on the horizon?
Yeah. So we are going to be launching our first official cohort of training providers under Speller's Method. Yes. So we had a Zoom info session just this past Tuesday, and there was over 200 people that showed up, which was really exciting. And then of those 200, we had almost 80 apply we have 40 spots that will be open for our first cohort. Yes, our goal with that will be kicking off that initial cohort the end of August, and that will run for 6 to 8 months. We have some flexibility there. And then beyond that, we will continue to be training providers. As far as the official Speller centers, that is, you know, has always been something, you know, in a 10-year plan that would we do something like a franchise option that's on the table. You know, nothing's ever off the table, but depending on where we're at, does it make sense? But our number one initial goal, so we started out, we have a very successful communication partner course that's online where you can go, you can find out more information, spellers.com is there. And then we also have what we call immersion weeks, which is a 1 week intensive for families that we host at one of our centers. We'll be looking at doing that again in 2026. Yes, what year are we in? 26. And then we will have another cohort in 2026. So that's kind of the expansion as far as Speller's go. But as far as, you know, here in Tampa and Atlanta, we'll be adding providers and adding OTs so that we can really support not only the spelling part of it, but the intentional motor planning aspect of it.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely love that. Can you tell us a little bit? I like that you told us about the training that's on the Spellers. I'm definitely going to put that in the show notes so people can contact you guys. But tell us a little bit about some of the documentaries, the name of the documentary.
Yes.
And your books also.
Yes. Okay. So Spellers, the movie, is the documentary that myself and Dawn-Marie Gavin were a part of. And that one, it was so fun. We went to Phoenix. It won the best picture at Phoenix Film Festival, which was, it was so much fun to be there with a whole bunch of Spellers. So that's actually available on YouTube now for free. So you can put that link in the show notes would be great, and people can just go right there. And then we co-authored Speller's guidebook. So that's like a guidebook for parents. It is, you know, our goal with that wasn't to teach you how to do it. It was more to talk about the method, kind of really working on some of that mindset shift that I talked about. So that's available on Amazon. You're welcome to go there. And then we have our local center website. So spellerstampa.com and spellersatlanta.com, depending on where you are. And that gives you a lot of information about what our local centers do specifically, because each center doesn't offer, they all offer spelling, but they don't always offer the movement or OT part of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I like that where they can get started, you know, exactly at the website. Go and check that out.
Yes.
And they can get in contact with you there as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yep.
What can people start to do, like parents that are listening and maybe they can't get into, they don't live close into our areas and they can't get into right away? What can they do to start supporting their child's motor and regulation as a tip for them?
So, I mean, I think there's a couple things, and I'm thinking both resource-wise and just kind of like, okay, what can I do as a parent, like, in the next 5 minutes, right? So number one, going to spellers.com or any of the center websites, you can set up a consult with our people that do our consults with, and even just kind of asking questions or getting, and do we all do Zoom, like Zoom now. So, you know, that's something that, you know, a lot of people are doing. So if you don't live locally, we have our communication partner course. So there's resources there. But what can I do now in this moment is that mind shift, right? It's start to presume competence. Even if it's just like what Dawn Marie used to say, she'd always be like, just rent the idea, right? Like just one day, presume competence in your kid and just see what happens. How are you feeling inside? What does your child respond to? But I even say too, like, look at everything that they're doing through the lens of motor planning. And I don't think I've said this in the whole podcast, which I typically do. So this is kind of strange. But as far as apraxia goes and whole body apraxia, the hardest thing for an individual to do with whole body apraxia is to initiate their body. In some, it's hard to inhibit, right? So for example, if you're asking your child to go get in the car because you have to go to the grocery store and they sit on the chair or the couch and they don't move, a couple of options could be the case. They don't want to go. Yep, that could be true, right? They didn't hear you. That could be true too, right? Or they have whole body apraxia and they cannot initiate their body to get going off the couch. So it's not that they didn't understand. It's not that they didn't want to go. They literally can't make the connection to initiate to move. And I would say that the majority of the time, that's the case. And so if we can shift our mindset to go, this is the problem, then we can then help them to get to that next step, which is motor coaching. So bring your shoulders forward, get your eyes on the door, bring your foot forward, you know, shift, keep walking, turn your body, all those things to, you're an expert on it now, to get there. It's almost sometimes, like, almost sometimes, that makes sense. It's when, like, we start to coach their body to initiate. So, like, if I'm sitting in this chair and we're not, like, the client isn't moving, sometimes all I have to say is, like, get your eyes on the door or bring your shoulders forward, because that's the first step of getting our body up. And then once we do that, it's like, whoa, and there we go. But once we have the mindset of they're just doing this on purpose to tick me off, they don't want to go, they don't understand because they have the cognitive capacity of an 18-month-old, like, that's when that whole, like, oh, it's heavy, right?
Yes.
And when that's your thought and belief, self-fulfilling prophecy, that's what's going to make it even more challenging.
Yep.
So
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100% because I know, like, people are like, how? Because, you know, Elijah can have some aggressive tendencies, but I stay very calm during them. And I like, how can you, people ask me all the time, how can you do that? Because it's not his intention.
Yes.
It's not directed at me.
Yes. Yes. And that's what's hard, because when we see that self-injurious or injurious towards others, we assume it's intention. So we don't want to do something. But what we're really talking about is that we have this impulsive movement that's not controlled, but that impulsivity is triggered by sensory or an emotion. And so when everybody's up here because we're anxious, that's going to keep happening. And then I hear, don't do that. That's not nice, which, of course, that's what people say. Then he's going up even more. And then you're like, stop, stop. And you're getting higher and higher. Guess what? He's going to go higher and higher. And that's when you said, you just keep here and he's going to match you. We're the most powerful co-regulators to everybody. It's not giving them a weighted vest. It's not giving them a squeeze that, you know, in terms of going squeeze them with the ball or with something. It's not on the swing. It's not. It's us. We are the most powerful co-regulators for our children.
Yes, 100%. You got to model it. You got to model it. And they feel you. You feel their energy, vice versa. Yep. You're living it together. Yep. So you got to take a lot of work to calm, keep yourself calm, because those moments can be amping for personal. You know, you bring up stuff, your own memories and all this stuff.
Absolutely.
But you got to stay calm. And the more you practice it, and the more you do it, and the better off it comes, and you'll grow together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I've learned myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Dana, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom.
You're
thank
so you. Welcome. This has been great. It's flown by. Honestly, it's flown by. And I apologize if I talk too much. You know, this is my passion. I love it. And I want to help and support and empower and get it out there. So I appreciate all that you're doing, Ruth, to be able to get this out there, too. Yes. Thank you.
You know, it's clear that it's not just about spelling. It's clear that you're wanting to unlock these motor pathways and show how true communication can happen. And I love that. I love the passion that you're bringing. I love the new things that are coming out when it comes to, you know, spelling to communicate and our non-speakers, the voices that aren't heard, that are no longer going to be in silence, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If you are listening and this conversation resonated with you today, I encourage you to dig deeper into the Spellers movement. You can find more information at SpellersTampa.com and check out the books, The Spellers Guidebook, and watch the documentary, Spellers, the Movie. I'm going to put all these links down in the show notes below. And parents, if you're feeling overwhelmed, know that you're not, you know, alone on this journey. There is hope. Your child has a voice. Just remember, you matter. They matter. Don't give up. Give them the tools to be able to utilize. If you're enjoying this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review and share with other parents and professionals who need to hear it. You can also connect with me on Facebook and TikTok and Instagram under Your Autism Journey. Until next time, remember, you are not alone.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.